Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for an intelligence briefing on what I think of as the war for the free world. A man I regard as truly one of the heroes of that war and who is tireless in waging it from his present perch on Capitol Hill is Congressman Trent Franks. He's a senior member of the House Armed Services Committee. He chairs the House Judiciary Committee's Constitution Subcommittee. He is also the co-chairman of an extraordinarily important caucus. It's called the Electromagnetic Pulse, or EMP Caucus. And he had, along with his colleagues, a signal accomplishment last night. And I couldn't be more thrilled to have him with us to talk a bit about what was done by the House of Representatives at his initiative, along with that of Congressman Mike McCaul of the Homeland Security Committee, Congressman Pete Sessions of the Rules Committee, and others, but very much at the initiative of our guest, Congressman Trent Franks. And thank you, Congressman, for what you did and for joining us to talk a bit about it. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, Frank. I should turn that around and say thank Frank Gaffney and the Grid Coalition and all of the efforts that you make on behalf of this. Let me suggest to you that your listeners and those who work with you should feel very good about themselves, because this was a profound accomplishment in my judgment, what happened last night. If this becomes law, and I actually think it has all of the marbles to do just that, it would be the first time in history that Congress has truly addressed the danger of electromagnetic pulse, whether natural or man-made, and its contingent threats to the security of this country. So it's a big deal what's happened, and I am grateful to you, sir, and all the people who work for you.
Well, thank you. The feeling obviously is mutual. Let me ask you, Congressman, we're talking about the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act. What exactly does it do? And what makes it so important in terms of its effects that prompts such a sense of optimism on your part?
Well, it does three main things. And one of those is to insinuate the whole EMP issue into our national planning scenarios, which creates a huge mechanism to, when I say creates, it really assimilates a huge mechanism to both prevent and to remediate against an EMP attack or EMP event that could affect our grid. So, in other words, we have all kinds of national planning scenarios, you know, like for hurricanes, or floods, or whatever it might be. We do what we can to try to mitigate those if they happen, but we also do everything we can to prevent those. And so we've got this huge national mechanism to do that. And now EMP is part of those national planning scenarios, that we have to start planning for that and trying to do everything we can to prevent and have the mechanism in place to remediate. The second thing that the CIPA, or the Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, does is to a major, what I would call both an awareness effort and a research effort, to really demonstrate to both those in government and outside government the importance of this issue, and to try to learn as much critical information as we possibly can, because science is what we're really trying to project here. And if we have the hard data beyond what we already have, it's astonishing how much we already have, but we put it in there to get some more specific information. But the third and most important thing in my mind is this requires a plan from the National Homeland Security Department for a plan to both protect against and to remediate a major EMP event. And that's a big one, because if they now have to start looking toward how are we going to do this, and we're going to put a strategic plan forward to do that, a plan is what precipitates action, in my judgment. And certainly there are other things that I hope to be able to do, but this is a huge leap forward in my mind.
A big first step. And Congressman, you've mentioned that, of course, this has to go through several other steps. The Senate at the moment, of course, is still in Democratic hands. Next January, it will be under new management. including apparently the chairmanship of Senator Ron Johnson in the Homeland Security Committee over there as its chairman. What do you make of the prospects for getting this bill through, if not in the next 2 weeks or so, certainly in the new Congress?
Well, let me address the next 2 weeks or so first. There is an outside possibility that we might get this approved in the Senate under what we call a unanimous consent. They can almost do anything in the Senate with unanimous consent, or UC. And we are going to make that effort, and I would encourage you and all of your people to be any part of that that you can be, because if that should succeed, that's the fastest way home, is just to get it done quickly and be done with it. There might even be a sense of incentive on the part of the Democrats, because many of them recognize this, especially there's a few key senators that recognize the danger of EMP on the Democrat side of the aisle. And so there is, it's not a hopeless effort. We might actually, lightning strikes, see the thing go through the Senate, and the White House has said they would not veto it. If they don't sign it, that it still becomes law. But going forward in the coming session, Ron Johnson, of course, is going to be the new chairman of Homeland Security, as you say, and he and I had a long discussion today. He is very committed to the cause and this issue, understands the significance of the issue, always kind of makes the point. He said, well, I'm not an engineer, I'm an accountant, but I'm a businessman, and I like to bring people together and solve problems, and he recognizes this as a real problem, and he believes that that's the first step in any case, is to know you have a problem and then define it. And fortunately, in the last 10 years, we've been able to, I think, convince most reasonable people of the significance of the problem, and we've defined it pretty well. Now it's time to move towards some solutions.
Well, it's high time for sure. As you know, Congressman, we're dealing with not only a host of adversaries who've figured out whether it's actually through the EMP line of attack or through sabotage or cyber warfare. We've had a warning from the commander of Cyber Command just last week that this is something that the Chinese and several other countries apparently are already very far advanced with in terms of getting inside our control systems, or whether it's the naturally occurring event, a kind of natural EMP, as you say. We're on borrowed time, I'm afraid. So your sense of urgency and your passion and your leadership on this is really appreciated. I hope, among other things that you'll be attending to, will be the question of whether we have a regulatory arrangement that is conducive to getting these things fixed at last. It certainly does not seem to have been doing that to date, and I'm very frustrated by it, as I know are you. Could I turn to one other issue, both by virtue of the fact that you are from a border state and from the fact that you are chairman of, as I mentioned, the Constitution Subcommittee of the House Judiciary Committee, and again, our guest is Congressman Trent Franks of Arizona. What do you make of the president's executive amnesty, and what do you think you and your colleagues ought to try to do now about it?
Well, first of all, I believe it probably doesn't surprise you that it's bad policy. I think that he will incentivize additional waves of illegal immigration, and it will only compound the problem. This president is in the process of dividing the country in some very significant ways, and I don't think that he serves either the illegal immigrant community or the cause of the rule of law or justice in general in any way when he makes these kinds of unilateral decisions. But more importantly than that, you know, you mentioned that I chair the subcommittee on the Constitution. You know, I think that there's probably nothing that this president has done or is doing that is more dangerous to the fundamental foundation of this republic than ignoring the Constitution and betraying his oath of office. There is something very frightening about a president who simply arrogates this power under himself and ignores the very oath that he took as president. And if that should become the norm, and it's a terrible thing, you know, precedents oftentimes lead to relaxed standards. Relaxed standards often lead to just casual standards, and then it's just a normal thing. If that should happen, Frank, without trying to sound overly overwrought, that it literally could be the death of the republic. Because once the chief executive officer of any republic all of a sudden begins to ignore the rule of law, to hold himself unconstrained to the Constitution, to the truth or his own words, if that should become a common practice of presidents, then that little unpleasantness with England we had is something we should probably apologize for.
Indeed. Congressman Trent Franks, I know that you will be on point on this issue in the Constitution Subcommittee as well as in the Congress more generally. We are deeply grateful to you, sir, for all that you do on so many of these fronts, notably as a member of the Armed Services Committee as well as the Judiciary Committee, and not least for your friendship and your support to this program. We look forward to having you with you further conversations about all this with you in the new year. In the meantime, stay well. Keep up the good work. We'll talk soon. Next up, we'll be speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Michael Siegel. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
On August 2nd, 2006, Mark Allen Lee became the first Navy SEAL to lose his life in Iraq.
Debbie Lee became a Gold Star mom that day.
And it started a lifelong mission of her own. In Mark's honor, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors,
dedicated to supporting the troops and their families.
AMW educates the public through speaking engagements, rallies, and events to raise awareness and appreciation of our military.
AMW advocates for the troops.
Funding, rules of engagement, benefits. AMW is committed to being a voice for justice for our troops. AMW serves Gold Star families, retreats, concerts, special events.
Good things to remind the families they're not forgotten.
America's Mighty Warriors.
Nonprofit.
Dedicated to the troops and their families.
Donations are tax deductible.
Log on to americasmightywarriors.org.
Find out how you can help.
The best of America deserves our best. Log on today.
americasmightywarriors.org.
Hello, I'm Jim Hansen of the Center for Security Policy, and welcome to the Free Fire Zone. Director of the National Security Agency, Admiral Mike Rogers, testified in an open hearing to Congress that the Chinese have the capability to take down the U.S. power grid with a cyber attack, and that they and two other nations have been actively hacking our network looking for vulnerabilities. This is hardly news to anyone who keeps track of our security infrastructure, but it was shocking to hear the NSA director say so publicly.
The cyber challenges we're talking about are not theoretical. This is something real that is impacting our nation and those of our allies and friends every day.
U.S. critical infrastructure is remarkably open to attacks in addition to cyber hacking, ranging from things as simple as destroying key components of our electrical grid. This happened last year in California when unknown individuals shot up 17 electrical transformers in one evening in an apparent attempt to cause a blackout. The worst-case scenario would be an electromagnetic pulse or EMP attack. This would take out pretty much anything with a plug and a circuit, including all of the systems that run our world. Electricity, water, communications, transportation. We would effectively take a one-way trip right back to the 1700s. A localized outage could be caused by a relatively simple device built using parts available at most electronics stores. But the nightmare scenario would be the airburst of a nuclear device. Even a relatively small one launched from a rocket aboard a container ship off the eastern seaboard would be undetectable until it was too late. A single push of the button could take out half the country. There are cost-effective solutions available that can help harden the grid and the other electronic systems we are so totally reliant on. They can help protect against malicious attacks as well as providing resiliency in these networks overall. Now is a good time to do this, because after an attack, it'll be a lot harder in the dark and the cold. I'm Jim Hansen, and you've been in the Free Fire Zone.
Every year, more American adults die from vaccine-preventable diseases than from breast cancer, traffic accidents, or AIDS. Vaccines like the one for pneumococcal disease can protect adults from illnesses that can cause missed days of work, hospitalization, and even death. Pneumococcal disease is an infection that can lead to pneumonia, meningitis, or even a severe blood infection. That's just one example of an infection that can spread from person to person. Getting vaccinated can help protect you and those close to you. I'm Dr. Susan Rehm of the National Foundation for Infectious Diseases. When I speak with my patients, I urge them to get all their recommended vaccines. Now I'm urging you to speak with your doctor to find out which vaccines you need. For more information about the vaccines that are recommended for adults and the diseases they prevent, like HPV, whooping cough, tetanus, and shingles, visit adultvaccination.org. That's www.adultvaccination.org.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to have joining us, I think for the first time, Lieutenant Colonel Michael Siegel, a retired member of the Israeli Defense Force. Today, he is a senior political analyst at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, an absolutely terrific organization in Israel. He is also a senior analyst at Foresight Prudence, which specializes in strategic risk analysis. Colonel, it's very good to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking some time.
Thank you.
You are an expert in Israel on matters involving Iran, and there's a lot to talk about in that subject alone, but I hope to cover a couple of others with you. But let's start with your take, personal and professional, as well as perhaps that of your countrymen, if you can sort of generalize, about the deal that is currently still cooking between principally the United States and Iran, it seems, though there are a couple of other parties to it.
Yes, unfortunately, we have another 7 months extension of the talks. We are conducting these talks. I'm following these talks for almost more than 10 years now, and I can see how the Iranians are actually fooling us, fooling the United States, fooling the West, the P5+1, and proceeding with their nuclear program. As planned, they know that there are going to be ups and downs in the plan regarding talks with the West, but the main course is still intact. They are continuing the program. They have their covert operations in the nuclear program, mainly in the military parts of this program, which are not known to the West. They are known to the IAEA. But the Iranians are still hiding those parts of the program from the IAEA. And in the recent IAEA report, the International Atomic Energy Organization, they mentioned that Iran is not cooperating with the agency, actually.
We're visiting with Lieutenant Colonel Michael Siegel, the Israeli Defense Forces retired, now senior political analyst at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs. And Colonel, you were just talking about this nuclear weapons program of Iran's. There's no doubt in your mind that that's what is afoot here, I take it, and that what's going on is still largely unknown, both to the International Atomic Energy Agency, at least in terms of all of its particulars, and certainly to the larger international community, because of the lengths to which the Iranians have gone to conceal such activities, specifically the nuclear weapons piece. Is that right?
Yes, they have a vast operation of concealing their nuclear program, and I worry, as once Tech Dev Donald Rumsfeld said, I worry about the unknowns, but we still have many known unknowns to us. But the Iranians are they are experts in hiding, experts in conducting a long time negotiations with the West, and the parts, the military parts of the program are still to be discovered. But they are, as I said, they are hiding it.
Yeah, and what you see coming of this deal that the United States is, as I say, largely responsible for brokering at this point, is essentially no relief from this nuclear ambition of the Iranian regime. And that what we'll find at the end of all of this, perhaps at the end of 7 months, is that they're just that much closer to, if not actually in possession of, nuclear capabilities?
The problem is that the Iranians are very close to their nuclear capability, because they have the know-how, they have the facilities, they have the advanced centrifuges, they have it all. It's just a matter of decision. It's not a matter whether they can produce a nuclear bomb or not. It's a matter of decision-making, of decision-makers in Iran, specifically the leader Khamenei, which from time to time lashes at Obama. He laughs at him He laughs at his letter, saying Obama says one thing in his letter and other things he says publicly. So they're in a very blunt lately. A week ago, the commander of the IRGC, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard, he said that all parts of Israel from north to south are covered by the missiles of the Palestinian resistance movement. And as we witnessed in the last operation in Gaza, we have seen that the Iranians actually supplied all this know-how and even missiles and rockets to the Palestinian Intifada.
And I want to come back to that in a moment, Colonel, but just staying with Iran for one more moment, because you really have tremendous expertise in this subject. Can I ask you to switch gears on to the other side of the Persian Gulf? The Iranians seem to have now taken over the government of Yemen. What are the strategic implications of that as you see it?
There are a lot of strategic implications. They're about to take control over the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb to the Red Sea, going to the Suez Canal, to the Mediterranean, and they are using these routes to smuggle weapons to the Palestinian organizations, to other organizations in North Africa. We know that the Iranians are involved in subversive activity in Egypt, in Tunisia, in Morocco, in Tunisia, in other places where the so-called Arab Spring occurred. And this will enable them to smuggle weapons to more easily using the Yemeni ports towards the Red Sea and the Suez Canal.
And by the way, as you know, this is a problem for us as well in the Western Hemisphere, because as you've documented at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs, they are very much present here as well. We're going to run out of time before we run out of topics for you, Colonel Michael Siegel. Let me just very quickly ask you to drill down for a moment on this intifada, as you put it, I guess 3.0, maybe the way to think of it, now taking place apparently not just with Hamas operating in Gaza, but I gather the IDF has recently exposed a plot by their operatives to wage jihad against Israelis in the West Bank as well. Talk quickly about that, if you would.
Yes, okay. Just to connect a few dots, you know that the Iranian leader Khamenei called to arm the Palestinians in the West Bank. And he tweeted this on his Twitter account a few times, and we can see that the cell that was exposed by the Shabak a week ago. Some of the activists were trained in Turkey. Some of them were trained in other places by Iranian IRGC commanders. And Iran is really taking advantage of this issue to try and make it its presence and influence in the West Bank. I don't think that we are going to a third intifada, even though just in the last 24 hours we have 3 to 4 incidents in the West Bank involving Palestinian terrorists, even the women terrorists. But I think that at the end of the day, the Palestinians are not interested. The common Palestinians are not interested in a vast intifada. And we can see that the incitement of Mahmoud Abbas, Abu Mazen, is inciting against the Jewish presence in Temple Mount. And others, but some of them are influenced by this incitement. But I think at the end of the day, the Palestinians, mainly in Ramallah, which live were relatively good with luxury life, nightlife, restaurants, are not really interested in a third intifada.
Well, let's hope not. And I think in part, if they don't, it's because of the continuing presence of the Israel Defense Forces in the West Bank. And heaven forfend if we find ourselves either as a result of our government action or your own, perhaps after the elections that are coming now, deciding to withdraw forces from that region. Colonel, I hope we will have a chance to talk with you again soon. We are hard out of time for this visit, but it's a great pleasure to meet you. We admire enormously your work at the Jerusalem Center for Public Affairs and also at Foresight Prudence. Keep it up and come back to us again soon if you would. Next up, Ambassador Frances Rooney, formerly representative of the United States at the Holy See, talks about the Pope and the Islamists. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the House of Representatives took an important first step towards protecting America's electrical grid and millions of its people whose lives depend critically upon it from attack or naturally induced destruction. Under the leadership of Homeland Security Committee Chairman Mike McCaul, Rules Committee Chairman Pete Sessions, and Representative Trent Franks, legislation requiring the nation to plan for such events was approved unanimously. That planning will hopefully make clear the necessity of taking steps to secure the grid before these things happen, rather than cope with the consequences afterwards. The U.S. Senate should adopt this Critical Infrastructure Protection Act, and President Obama should sign it into law as a matter of the utmost urgency. There's not a moment to waste in securing our electrical grid before it's too late. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. So now that the nuclear talks with Iran have been extended for a second time, how should Congress respond? Predictably, the Obama administration is urging Congress to hold off on new sanctions and give diplomacy a second chance. Many members of Congress disagree, however, contending that the talks with Iran have failed to stop or slow its nuclear program and are certain to result in a weak final agreement. For example, Republican Senator Mark Kirk said after the extension, "We're definitely being played by the Iranians." Senator Kirk is trying to win a veto-proof majority for sanctions against Iran in the new Congress in January. Congress needs to act decisively to put an end to the dangerous nuclear negotiations with Iran by passing sanctions that take effect immediately until Iran comes clean on its nuclear program, complies with all UN Security Council resolutions, and allows IAEA inspectors full access to its nuclear facilities. I'm Fred Fleitz with the Center for Security Policy. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we're joined by the Honorable Francis Rooney. He formerly served as the U.S. Ambassador to the Vatican from 2005 to 2008. He is currently the CEO of Rooney Holdings, Inc., and the author of The Global Vatican, An Inside Look at the Catholic Church, World Politics, and the Extraordinary Relationship Between the United States and the Holy See. One of the most interesting and arguably most important of battle spaces is the war that is currently unfolding between those who adhere to a doctrine they call Sharia, an Islamic supremacist program, and, well, the rest of us, notably Christians, but not exclusively, the Jews, Zoroastrians, Buddhists, and others, and for that matter, atheists as well. We have had, over the weekend, some very interesting conversations taking place between the leader of one of the major denominations of Christendom, namely Pope Francis of the Catholic Church, with, on the one hand, the president of Turkey, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, and also the head of the Eastern Church, Patriarch Bartholomew I. Mr. Ambassador, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Great to have you with us.
Frank, thank you for having me back on.
I'm really keen to get your read on this pope. We've talked about him in the past. He continues to bedazzle many and intrigue others.
What do you make of him, broadly speaking, at the moment? And then let's turn to this this particular trip and what he was trying to do there.
Well, I think he's proving up to be a very complex individual. And as such, as I think he's also been misunderstood a great bit. This last trip to Turkey, building upon his very interesting trip to Albania, which he used as an opportunity to bring visibility to interreligious dialogue and to Muslims, Orthodox, and Roman Catholics working together in a country and in a government, made a nice platform for stepping up the heat, if you will, and going to Turkey to advance some of these same agendas.
And to the extent that this complexity is in part contributing to a kind of complex response to challenges that we're facing, as I mentioned in this this war for the free world sort of religious facet, namely the plight of Christians in the Middle East at the moment at the hands of Islamists, notably but not exclusively the Islamic State, Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the like. How do you think the Pope has addressed that problem? Has it been adequate to the challenge we're facing?
Well, I think they might have gotten off to a bit of a slow start, like you and I talked about last time we visited, but I think the Pope is actually starting to sound more and more like Pope Benedict every day. He focused on the four major things that the Holy See has been trying to accomplish in dealing with radical Islam and terrorism ever since Pope Benedict started to speak up about it. And you know, one, or to use the Holy See's soft power platform to bring the maximum visibility to the plight of Christians, as you mentioned. Two is to continue to critically and clearly denounce terrorism, which uses religion as a shield or as an excuse, and their religious orientation gives them a great standing to do that. And then on a little more tactical bit, I think that the Pope was, by praying at the Blue Mosque and saying what he did, he brought some consistency to Pope Benedict's visit in 2006, and I think that shows this continual thread of trying to convince the Muslims that this is their fight and that we're in it with them, but they've got to engage and to leverage the Muslims into this fight through the device of interreligious dialogue. And that ties back into the Albania trip as well.
I want to get right to that point, though, Mr. Ambassador. One of the things that we've talked about before and that is very troubling to me is the use that the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, and its followers and acolytes, if you will, have used to great effect is this practice of interfaith dialogue, really for the purpose of subverting the other religious communities, that it's kind of a one-way bridge, basically, as Sayyid Qutb, one of their leading ideologues, used to put it. To what extent do you think that the Pope really has clarity on the nature of this problem? He went to some lengths to say, you know, it's wrong to ascribe terrorism to Islam, and yet this jihadist program that Sharia commands is all about terror. And I just wonder whether he's missing the point. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think these guys, in a high-level diplomatic talk, he's not going to out some particular Muslim Brotherhood or terrorist organization rather than just speak clearly against the evils that are being perpetrated. And then he mentions, of course, ISIS. But I think the Holy See is pretty schooled up on the degree to which many so-called interreligious dialoguers of the Muslim side of the equation are basically infiltrated. And I know we were always pretty careful over there who we drew in, and the Holy See guys were always pretty careful who they drew in to speak with. You know, the thing about the Quran, this is consistent with what Pope Benedict said at Regensburg and what he said to me privately a couple of times, is that in order for Islam to reconcile with the modern world, the Quran needs to revert to being a religious document, not a, as you say, Sharia law, civil law document, and it needs to be able to be, I think the word the Holy See uses is developed, but in a sense of interpreted in light of and contextualized in light of the modern world. And until all that happens, I think we have a fairly intractable problem on our hands.
Well, we do, and I hope that he sees it that way as well. I know that his predecessor did, at least when he spoke at Regensburg, but I'm concerned that to some extent what he's saying may be interpreted by some as obscuring that fundamental reality. And it's not that all Muslims, seek jihad or terrorism or Sharia supremacism. Far from it. But those that do clearly are the problem. And I just hope that his characterization of Islam and his dealings with some, like President Erdogan of Turkey, aren't going to give rise to further weaknesses and vulnerabilities on the part of Christians and, for that matter, the rest of us. Let me turn to one last item, if I may, Mr. Ambassador. Again, our guest is Ambassador Francis Rooney, the author of The Global Vatican and a former U.S. ambassador to the Holy See. What do you make of the effort that the Pope was making with Patriarch Bartholomew I? This was seen by many to be really an historic effort to kind of forge a new partnership between the two branches of the Catholic creed. What is your estimation of where we see those two branches going from here?
Well, I think, the more the Judeo-Christian ethic is under siege by radical Islam, the more the different components that make that ethic up seem to be drawn together. I guess that's just human nature. And I think the Pope's trying to, I wouldn't want to say the word exploit, it's more of a secular term, but I think he's trying to leverage, if you will, these threats around the world and draw the Orthodox into greater comedy with the Holy See, which is probably a good thing given the magnitude of the threats that we're facing. You know, Pope John Paul tried it, and he went up to Russia and gave back an icon, and the Russian Orthodox Church kind of said, thank you very much, but we don't really have much to talk about with you. So hopefully, given the different threat matrices that we're seeing, maybe we'll get a little better response out of the Greek Orthodox.
Well, there's the old expression, I think it was attributed to Samuel Johnson, that the prospect of hanging concentrates the mind wondrously. But whatever it is, both of these strains of the old Catholic Church, Roman Catholic Church, clearly have in common the prospect that the jihadists are after them in a way that is murderous and I fear will confine itself to the Middle East, even if they're successful in doing what the two leaders of the church, explained that they would not stand for, namely the driving of the Christians out of the Middle East. Ambassador Rooney, I'm afraid we're out of time, but there's so much more to talk about. I hope that you'll be willing to come back to us as particularly this vexing challenge of how to address what is fundamentally, it seems to me, a political threat, not a religious one, but nonetheless one that is dressed up in religiosity, namely Sharia, is addressed by our leaders and both clerical and secular. Thank you so much for your service to our country, sir, and that you're currently providing at Rooney Holdings. Keep it up and come back to us again very soon. Next up, Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor turned pundit par excellence, now with National Review Online and PJ Media, graces us with his presence. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness.
Get some rear security.
From combat operations to humanitarian assistance, in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation, for us all. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. One of the high points of our week is the chance to visit with the absolutely magnificent Andrew McCarthy, former federal prosecutor turned pundit par excellence, now with National Review Online and PJ Media, among other outlets. You frequently see him at Fox, and we're always thrilled that he graces us with his presence each week here at Secure Freedom Radio. Andy, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Frank, it's great to be with you.
You have been doing extraordinarily important work on so many fronts, Andy. It's hard to keep up with you. One is, however, race baiting, I guess, is what it seems to me to be amounting to, associated with Ferguson. And I don't mean just that of Al Sharpton and his ilk, but actually President Obama and the Attorney General of the United States. Is that too harsh a characterization of what they've been up to?
No, I really don't think so, Frank. I think what you're seeing is a community organizer-type rabble-rousing, but now with the power and influence of the government behind it, it's an awful sight for the American people to behold. And I think all you need to really know about what is the agenda behind what they're obviously doing is that the Ferguson grand jury came out, I think, with a finding that a lot of people squawk about, but nobody can really poke holes in. There's a body of forensic and ballistic evidence, and it matches up with not only what the police officer's version of events was, but with the testimony of several African-American witnesses who don't have an axe to grind. And generally speaking, the way prosecutors evaluate testimony is that you match up what you hear with the other things you know, and you particularly rely, if you think you have competent scientific experts, you particularly rely on the ballistics evidence and the forensics evidence, because that doesn't ever have any bias problem. So you have this report that comes out, and it's clear that they don't have a prayer of making a murder case, which is why they quite appropriately filed what we call a no-true bill, which is what happens when the grand jury chooses not to indict. Now, understand, for the federal government to get involved in this, because there's no federal murder statute, they have to show a civil rights violation. So that in addition to everything that they would have to prove in Missouri, namely the murder case, which can't be proved, they would also have to show that this police officer willfully and intentionally took away or schemed to take away some cognizable right that Michael Brown had under federal law. The thought that they could do that, especially given the very quick circumstances of the exchange, it's absurd.
And we're told that they are continuing to consider some kind of charges against Officer Wilson. And, of course, you had the spectacle of the Attorney General of the United States down in Martin Luther King's pulpit in Atlanta yesterday, essentially whipping people up with the idea that there is some racial profiling going on here that has to be corrected for through a whole new training program, and the president's offering cameras for police officers and so on. And again, I just wonder whether what we're seeing is calculated, Andy, to compound the problem rather than alleviate.
It's not only calculated, Frank, it's perverse if you think about it, because what are Holder's hobby horses here, really? Racial profiling, which is something he's talked about for years, right? Well, who's being racially profiled here? There's no evidence that Officer Wilson committed a murder. He's being subjected to a civil rights investigation by the Eric Holder Justice Department for one reason and one reason only. He's white, and the person he shot in an altercation was black. So race is the only sole reason why Wilson is being investigated for a civil rights violation. This from the crusader against racial profiling.
Let me turn to another subject, because there's so much more to talk about, and I could visit all day with you about each of these issues. But I do want to get your thoughts as the author of Faithless Execution, making the political case for Obama's impeachment, that we've had not only the palpable example of lawlessness on this president's part with respect to the executive amnesty that he announced shortly before Thanksgiving, but we've now had him actually acknowledge publicly that he changed the law. How do you read this, and where does it put us as a constitutional matter?
Our great friend and someone I've probably learned more about the law about than just about anyone I know, Judge Mukasey, former Attorney General Michael Mukasey, always had a great expression that someone has made the obvious explicit. And I think what President Obama has done here is merely make the obvious explicit. It's to anyone with eyes and an IQ of over 11, it's been perfectly obvious that he's run roughshod over federal law since the first day he's been in office. So now we have the additional add-on to that, that he has admitted that he changed the law. It's interesting in the sense that it puts the lie to everybody in his administration who feverishly tried to say that this was somehow within both precedent and standing law and procedure. But, you know, every now and then the mask falls.
And this really just goes right to the heart of your thesis in Faithless Execution and in so much of your writing at National Review and elsewhere, that, you know, we're witnessing serial fraud being perpetrated on the American people, and in this case particularly with very, I think, profound implications for our constitutional republic. Andy, let me turn to yet another topic, because you have been, among other things, the chairman of something called the Benghazi Accountability Coalition, of which I've been very proud to be a part. We had something that, in my experience in Washington, which is now approaching, I'm sorry to say, four decades worth, I've never quite seen. And that was a very late Friday afternoon on the eve of Thanksgiving holiday data dump by not the administration, folks. I mean, this is to be expected from them, right? But from Mike Rogers, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, about Benghazi. Tell us what that report was about and what on earth its implications might be.
What I think the report was about, Frank, was a congressional committee under the leadership of a chairman who's leaving Washington, that's Mike Rogers, that was desperate basically to paper over its own incompetence and inability to get anywhere on the Benghazi investigation, who now knows that its work is going to be checked by a special committee that is looking at Benghazi and is fearful of the fact that they're going to find a lot of things that this committee didn't find. So they issued a Friday report trying to clear everybody of everything. But to not get in the weeds in the short time we have left, it creates more questions than it answers. And while I am not, notoriously in agreement with Lindsey Graham, he said it was unmitigated nonsense. He actually used more colorful language than that, and I'm going to agree with him emphatically on that.
it raises, again, though, the question, as invariably you'll find Democrats saying that, well, there's nothing to see here, folks, move along, that they are now able to cite this Republican-led committee as having arrived at essentially the same conclusion. It's very squirrely business indeed. Andy, lastly and very quickly, we have the president perhaps now engaging in yet another act of lawlessness with respect to closing Guantanamo Bay by simply, well, exporting all of its detainees. How serious a problem is that strategically as well as in terms of the law?
Yeah, well, it's not illegal, Frank, for the president, as long as he doesn't bring them to the United States, which would violate the law here. He is the commander-in-chief. In wartime, the commander-in-chief has supremacy over the disposition of captured enemy combatants. Now, that's a separate issue from whether what he's doing is an immense dereliction of duty, which, as I point out in Faithless Execution, is a more profound high crime and misdemeanor than merely violating a law. I mean, some laws are very important, some laws are not so important, but dereliction of duty by the commander-in-chief, particularly replenishing the enemy in wartime, is a pretty significant
thing.
It is
indeed. We have to leave it at that, my friend. Thank you so much, Andy, as always, for the great work that you do. National Review Online, PJ Media, Fox, and elsewhere. But we're especially appreciative for your visits here. Come back to us again soon. I hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Afty. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.